Welcome to another episode of Everything is Canada, CineLink's podcast. I'm your host, Steve Dunk, and however you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If there's an author you'd like to see on the show, email me at steve@cinelinks.com and I'll do my best to accommodate. On today's show, we kick off 2021 in a new season of Everything is Canon with one of my favorite authors to talk to, Justina Ireland. She's just released her third Star Wars book, A Test of Courage, who along with fellow scribers Charles Soule, Claudia Gray, Daniel Jose Aldo, and Kevin Scott are part of phase one of the massive Star Wars The High Republic publishing initiative. This initiative will see releases across a wide spectrum of physical and digital media and across a wide spectrum of age groups. Her book, along with Soule's Light of the Jedi, are kicking things off, and I couldn't be more excited to have her on the show. Warning, this is a spoiler discussion, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled, better stop listening now, but definitely double back once you've had a chance to read the book. Hi everyone, welcome to a new year and a new season of Everything is Canon. Before we get going, I just want to start the year by throwing some shade at a white guy, namely Julius Caesar, who, if you didn't know, came up with the Julian calendar, which made it a 12-month year instead of 10 a very long time ago. So if 2020 felt exceptionally long, then you can blame that guy. But as the great Maya Angelou said, life's a bitch, you got to go out and kick some ass. So in that vein, and even though most of our problems do still exist, let's all choose to kick some ass this year. And I've got a mission to do just that. I hope you all do the same. But in my little world, 2021 is kicking off in a big, big way because I get to talk to one of my favorite people. She's the author of many wonderful books, including Promise of Shadows, Dread Nation, Deathless Divide. This year, she's releasing two books, including her third Star Wars book, and it's a big one, but we'll get to that in a second. She's been on the show before. She'll be back on it again, hopefully in May. Please welcome my friend, Justina Ireland.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for coming on, Justina. I greatly appreciate it.
No worries. Sorry, I'm trying to find a quieter room. You're still under COVID, so it's like space is always at a premium in my house.
Everyone's home, yeah.
Yeah, everyone's home all the time. We never leave ever again.
Yeah. I want to start off by wishing you a happy belated birthday.
Oh, thank you.
And that was just the other day, right?
Yeah, it's funny because it's like I've always had, you know, my birthday has always been in December, but this year it feels a little more like I've accomplished something because I made it through this year and then got to December and got to my first day. And I'm like, all right, another one on the books.
Right.
Let's go next time, next year. It's a December birthdays, for anybody who has a December birthday knows, they're the worst birthdays because you don't get to have any cool parties, which this year didn't matter because it's a pandemic.
Right.
But you're also, you always get everything smushed together with Christmas. And this year was especially noteworthy for that because the mail is so slow here in America.
Right.
It's like really, really slow right now.
So you can't even really, you can't even have a party. You can't do anything, can you?
No.
So we're here to talk about Star Wars and in particular, The High Republic and your book, A Test of Courage, which is one of the first releases for, I guess we're calling it phase one of The High Republic, which is starting in the beginning of January. Yours and Charles's books are the first two to come out. But before we get to that, I always like to talk to you about sort of what's going on in the world. And in one last huge middle finger from 2020, you know, we just saw this article last week, you know, about the huge disparity in publishing, right? Mm-hmm. And we know why that's the situation. But I think what I'd like to maybe just talk to you for just a minute about is what can we do to make that better? I know that's like, it's not an easy answer. It's a lot of things that we're all going to have to do. And it's not even all of us that have to do it.
Yeah.
Right. It's the 89%. But just, I really want to, like, this year, I really want to try and focus more on solutions, less on problems. And so what's something do you think that we should all be doing to help get those numbers really going in the other direction?
You know, I think one of the easiest things people can do, because I think what happens is we get faced with a big problem like inequality in publishing. And we kind of are all like, what do we do? What do we do? But we're like panic mode. So we're like, what do we do? What do we do? And so we run around in a circle and we're really upset about things, but we never like have that forward momentum to change things. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of the conversations that are happening, especially regarding the article you're talking about in the New York Times,
yep,
talks about things like publishers can do. But the majority of us don't work at a publishing house. So one of the things I think that everybody can do that's really, really easy is look at your book buying. How many of the books that you've bought have been by authors of color? If you don't know, you don't know, that's fine. But the majority of books nowadays have an author photo in the back. And it's pretty easy to figure out if an author is an author of color, or even if they just, you know, they look like they possibly could be. And so I think it's really easy for readers to diversify their reading, to look at what their list of like things they want to read or have read, and then try to find something that is written by an author of color. It can be as simple. And I think, I know that sounds overwhelming because there are a lot of people who are like, I don't pay attention to the authors I read. However, what you will find is once you start adding authors of color to your readings, to your like kind of like I call it your reading menu, like your diet of reading that you have, it'll naturally become more diverse. Because, you know, if you pick up a Justina Ireland book, I might be the first Black author you've ever read, but if you pick up my book and you say, I really liked Dread Nation, people are naturally going to tell you, oh, L.L. McKinney, A Blade So Black, oh, The Bell by Daniel Clayton, Tracy Dion, Legendborn. These are read-alikes, right? And a lot of times the read-alikes are just because they're also written by Black authors, but it's naturally going to just build in better recommendations for you. The other thing is I think we always focus a lot on book buying, but also we should look at our local libraries, because collection development is something that doesn't happen in a vacuum. So if you go to the library regularly, like I'm a big fan of the library because I read a lot more than I like have the wherewithal to buy. Well, especially with newer authors, I'm less likely, like most people, to take a chance on a newer author. So I'd like to usually get those first books new to me authors from the library, and then I'll tend to, you know, buy afterwards. But I think if you look at your library and you're saying like, hey, I'd like to read this book and it's not there at the library, asking for those books to be ordered will naturally diversify the collection of the library, mm-hmm. which means you're not just diversifying your own reading, you're helping diversify your community's reading.
Right.
And I think, you know, if I go into the library and say, hey, you got the Justina Ireland book, it looks a little hinky. But if somebody else does that, it looks like you actually want to read the book. And I will be honest, like my local library is, we have countywide systems here in Maryland, and there's a way to request books to be for the library, either through OverDrive if you read digital books, or just through my library's website. There's like recommend a book, you know, for the collection, and you can go in there and ask them to buy a book. If you know your librarian, I know now it's like for me, I haven't been into the library in a long time because everything's like curbside pickup. But when we get back to the point where you're going in and talking to a librarian and ask them, you know, hey, I noticed you guys don't have any of this author or this author. You know, I'd love to see a copy, because that one copy of a book for an author can really be life changing. I mean, I think that's one of the things, like discovery for fiction is so difficult, especially now where you have like the people who get marketed are obviously the people who they're well known or have a huge marketing budget behind them. And I think it's really, really hard because a lot of times that's not the author. Those are not authors of color. Those are not queer authors. Those are not disabled authors, unless it's like a platform book, like a nonfiction book. Mm-hmm. And so I do think it's if you just look at the authors who are you're reading, I mean, because almost every author's on social media, because that's one of the things the publishers are like, that helps sell books, go out there and be charming, which sometimes it does, sometimes it backfires. But one of the things about authors is it's pretty easy to figure out where people's like, you know, druthers land. And so I think it's really a good thing to be a well-informed reader.
Right.
Which, I mean, personally, I have not always been a well-informed reader, so I don't fault people for doing it. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking around at publishing and you're like, why is it so white? Why do we have authors who are, you know, writing stories that they have, books that they have no business writing and getting rewarded for it? Like, how do I make sure, like, the storytelling is more authentic? How do I get better storytelling? Because I really do think a diverse reading list makes you a better reader, and it exposes you to better storytelling and different storytelling. I just think it's just such an easy thing to like look at your reading. I mean, and if you're a person who doesn't look at your reading, I highly recommend somewhere like Goodreads. Like I know authors hate Goodreads.
Right.
But as a reader, I love Goodreads as a reader because it gives me a very easy way to track my reading, to figure out the books I liked. It's a way to make sure that, like, especially because I like to read these sort of urban fantasy or romance series, whether it tends to have like 14, 15 books in the series. And it's a great way to figure out if I've read a book or not, because sometimes you read a book and you're like, I think I read this before, and you didn't. You just read, you know, another romance that maybe feels a little similar, especially if it's the same author. But it's really nice to track. Those are three super easy things readers can do. You know, track your reading with an app like Goodreads. And I think there used to be another one called Litzy. I'm not sure if it's still around, but it was also a way to track your reading. Ask your local library to carry the books that you think are well worth being read in your community, especially if they're by authors of color, queer authors, disabled authors. And then just make sure that you're supporting those authors as well when you have the money. I understand, like, especially in pandemic, cash is strapped. That's where you go back to number two and just go to the library and ask your librarian to buy those books, because libraries have much bigger funds. And I guarantee you are probably not the only person who wants to read that book. Somebody else will want to read it as well.
All great things we can all do. And, you know, there's even more, but those are definitely, you know, three huge ones for sure. Just to put a pin in it, my final thing is, you know, unless you're like intentionally not reading books by BIPOC authors, you're just, and you love to read and you love good stories, you're missing out. I mean, if you're not reading like Deathless Divide, Burning God, Black Sun, go down the list, you're the one who's losing, right? Because these are incredible stories that you're missing out on. So if you love good stories and you love good books, I'm telling you, there's like a whole industry that you're missing out on if you are not reading books by BIPOC authors. So that's always the thing I always go on. Like, you know, if you're not worried about, you know, politics or marginalization or any of that stuff, you just like a good story, well then I'm telling you, there's a huge array of great stories just sitting there waiting to be read. So, and one of these stories is A Test of Courage. Your latest Star Wars book, and like I said, one of the first phase of this great new High Republic publishing initiative by Star Wars, which strikes me, I've read all three novels, all three books. This initiative strikes me as an incredibly bold move for Star Wars. You know, you and I we're old. We've been fans of Star Wars since the beginning. And, you know.
I like to just casually say we're old.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. I don't even know how old you are. I don't know. Maybe I just. Wait, okay. We've talked about it before. This is an incredibly bold move. I mean, there's almost nothing recognizable in these stories meaning the stuff that Star Wars usually leans on, right? Stormtroopers and these sort of, these striking Skywalkers, all these strong images. You know, obviously the Jedi are there, and that's a huge, huge tip of the hat. But what's the most attractive thing to you for this initiative as not just a writer, but as a fan?
I love it because you don't know where things are going to go. So, I mean, I've written a couple of Star Wars books before, and you can't kill Lando, right? Like, you can't turn in the synopsis for a story and like, oh, by the way, at the end of the second act, Lando dies.
Right.
He has to be alive for the movies. And then, you know, now he's in Episode 9, so he has to be alive all the way until Episode 9 at least, right? And so one of the things about having storytelling that's tied to the film is you kind of already know who, like, your golden geese are, so to speak. You know your characters that are going to be, like, your premier characters that are going to make it no matter what. And now you have to give them away to give them a character arc without really putting them in any real kind of danger, right? Because even as scary as it gets in, like, Spark of the Resistance, we know Rose, Poe, and Rey are going to make it. They are because they're in Episode 9, and the book takes place before that. And in this case, we're telling stories that have no blueprint, right? Like, we have the blueprint. We're creating the blueprint. So if we decide this character is going to die, we know that. Fans do not. And so it's so exciting to be able to create characters and tell stories where it's still Star Wars, but we aren't necessarily constrained by the other media that already exists. And we are in some ways, right? We still have a very, like, a very tangible idea of what is and is not Star Wars, right? We're not coming in here, obviously, with a completely blank slate. We're not, it's not all of a sudden the zombie book, right? It's still Star Wars. But in that slate we have a lot more flexibility with our characters. And I think that, as a writer, is so exciting to be able to have basically my cake and eat it, too. Right. Because a lot of times writers will complain about writing an IP or work for hire, IP being intellectual property, mm-hmm. work for hire, just when you work in somebody else's book. And one of the things that we'll complain about is they're like, well, I wanted to do this, but I couldn't because they're doing that in another piece of media or another story. And that's just how it goes. But in this case, we don't have that concern because we are it. This is it. And if if you don't want to read a book, then you're going to wait for Star Wars for a little while, right? Mandalorian's wrapping up. You know, we don't have any movies announced quite yet. So this is it for a little while. And I think that for me as an author and as a reader is super exciting.
Right.
Super exciting to have the focus on reading. Yeah.
Yeah. You are the timeline, basically. And,
yeah.
And you've got till 34 roughly BBY to wrap things up, right? So, that's as far back as we've gone up until these books have come out, right? With Cavan's book and Claudia's done it around that same time. So, unless Vern lives to be 217 years old.
Yeah.
You've got so much room, right? To create a completely different timeline that, yeah, isn't necessarily connected. Now, there are some connections. So I don't want to waste time by, people can go online and read the synopsis of A Test of Courage. So, and the High Republic. And I think everyone understands that this is part of a publishing initiative and they're all connected in some way. It all takes place 200 years before anything recognizable as far as what we know as Star Wars, right? Like the Phantom Menace type of era, right? Mm-hmm. So what's happening is we've got this entirely new era where, the Republic is shining bright and there's this new evil presence that's starting to emerge called the Nil, which are the resident baddies for this timeline. And there's all these stories taking place sort of like not only apart from each other, but congruently as well. And so this story, A Test of Courage, that you wrote, again, is taking place apart from the other two books, but once people read it and read all three, we'll understand the connectivity that's involved. How's that as a challenge for you writing this book? Not because you have to write a compelling story that's not only stands apart, but has to connect to a larger, broader picture.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly challenging.
But in a sense, is that sort of similar than just to writing any Star Wars book?
Yeah, it's not though, because in the case of like any Star Wars book, you usually have a good idea of everything that's happening before or after. And whether it's because like you've been exposed to it, when I wrote Lando's Luck, I had the script for Solo. I had to fly to San Francisco and sit in the Lucasfilm offices and read the script for Solo. And there were still parts that were redacted, right? Like no one was emailing me the script. And then I had that to go off of when I went to go write Lando's Luck. And then for Spark of the Resistance, there were a bunch of other media tie-in pieces that were coming out at the same time. So I got like this timeline that was pretty like complex of like all the things that were happening, but with no spoilers for episode 9. So like, it's like I had a good idea of some of the other stuff that was happening. And then I had a vague idea of what was going to happen in episode 9, but not like anything that was concrete. In this case, if I want to know what's happening in Light of the Jedi, I can message Charles and like, hey, what did you do with this character in Light of the Jedi? Are they in there? I know you're still drafting. And it's like, it's an immediate. We have a Slack channel that we talk to each other. And it's really different to have access to the people who are actually writing the same, like kind of shared world with you.
Right.
And having immediate access. And so a lot of our stories, I know it's like you guys are just getting like the first books, but like one of the things that's great is like everyone is really good about leaving story space, which is kind of like when you're telling a story, leaving space for other people to bring in what they love about a story. and like expound upon it and build upon it. And so I think it's going to be really exciting for folks, as especially as they start digging into the books and the comics, and they see like how things link back together. Cause I mean, it's a really big galaxy, but like anywhere else, sometimes it can feel really small, because it feels like, you know, you're dealing with like the same five people. And in this case, I think we've been able to kind of get away from that in some ways, because we are five authors working on it, and it is such a big initiative, and there's so much story to tell.
Right. And I mean, I just find the whole idea so great and exciting, because I mean, on one hand, you're not reinventing the wheel, but on the other hand, you're maybe changing the shape of the wheel. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, right. Yeah. So it's like, you're right. It's still Star Wars. There's a base. There's always going to be like that baseline. Right. And that's because, you know, thanks to sort of pre-2014, we have thousands of years of like this information in our heads that, you know, even though we know it's not canon, it's still out there. And
yeah,
it feels like, you know, there is sort of this sense that you guys are maybe, you know, getting closer and closer. Not, you know, maybe I don't mean you guys as in you and Charles and Cav, but Star Wars Publishing, Lucasfilm. So when you heard, or maybe when you heard, were you part of the decision to start at 200? Or sorry, I guess I'd be, 234? Are we allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, so I think that came out of a conversation. So the way the initiative started is the five of us were kind of emailed.
You have to start somewhere, and...
Right. And so when we were talking about the things that we liked before we started writing, one of the things we talked about in depth was the idea of, you know, do we go back or do we go forward? And then we talked about like, what are the challenges of going back? What are the challenges of going forward? And so that was at that first Skywalker Ranch meeting we had. And then the second Skywalker Ranch meeting, we had all sent in pitches, and Kevin Scott's pitch was kind of like where we got this idea of what scares the Jedi that became like the driving question for our storytelling.
Right.
And I'll be honest, I'm not sure if Cav selected the time period as being right before like the movies, the prequel trilogy, but it's kind of funny because we have like the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy, and right, the sequel trilogy.
Right.
So it's like the prequel trilogy. So he wanted to set it before that. And I'm not sure when we finally like narrowed in on this idea of the High Republic. It might have been Mike talking about that Obi-Wan quote of a thousand generations of Jedi.
Yeah. Because I mean, if you age the adults in The Phantom Menace, 200 gets you a clear whole generation before.
Yeah.
Right. And I think so that helps. Like, I mean,
Yeah. And so like, I mean, I don't know exactly where it came from, because mostly I am always dazzled by the shiny shit that's happening. So, so you're like, we're going to get to tell original stories about the Jedi. And I was like, yay, Jedi. And I'm not focusing on like the why of things. So yeah, so I can't remember if it was Mike or Cav's pitch that came up with that. Mm. But I am one of those people who loves mining history for stories.
Yeah.
I am a huge fan of like going backwards. And I'm not necessarily in love with it all the time. Like there's a lot of storytelling where they do a prequel and I'm like, this didn't need a prequel.
Yeah.
But in the case of Star Wars, there's, you know, you have like so much, like there's so much like galactic civil war or pending galactic civil war in the movies, that it's almost nice to be in a different time period and saying, okay, what else can go wrong besides a civil war?
Even like, well, I think a lot of it is whether you look at these films and these stories, you know, by release or just chronological or whatever, they all start in progress. Right.
Yeah.
Like, right. We join them. Yeah, we join them in progress. Yes. So automatically, our brain is saying, "There's more. This goes back further than what we're being shown."
Yeah, and I think that's like. I mean, I've always been interested in. I mean, one of the reasons I like reading Star Wars as opposed to like the movies or TV shows is you get all these little nuance and these like asides that you don't necessarily get because there's not time on film, right? Movies are expensive to make, and so you like get distilled down to like the most like crucial things. And I think in a book you have a little bit more space to have a like an offhanded aside about like, oh yes, that took place in this time period in that sector, and you're like, ooh, wait, I want to know more about that, right? And it's like, I don't know, did you ever see the terrible Starship Troopers movie with Caster Van Dien? And I know it's a terrible movie, but I love it. And one of the things I've always loved about that
Who
movie
says it's
is
a
like,
terrible movie?
I don't. I think that's like the general
what?
Consensus that it was a it
maybe
was
part
a
two,
movie,
maybe
like,
Star, maybe Starship yes. Troopers two, but not one.
The,
come on,
the unnecessary sequel. But that first one, one of my favorite parts of that movie is where it's like, "Would you like to know more?" And it's
yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
So it's like that very internet kind of, would you like to know more? That very like science center. And that's always been me with Star Wars. It's like, would you like to know more? I'm like, yes. And they're like, sorry, this article does not exist.
That's so funny.
So now I get to write the article so that it exists. Right. Yeah. So I think it's so weird to talk about it because it's such a cool, awesome thing to be a part of. But at the same time, you want to approach it from like, a relatively rational place where you're not just like hand waving and screaming. Right. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah. Like, yeah. And sometimes it's like, it's hard to talk about these things in a way that like a storyteller would, because it's like, yes, there is that aspect of the storytelling, but there's also like, it's really cool to be a fan and be able to write and work on something that you've enjoyed yourself.
You mean you have to be professional? Is that what you're saying? You have to act like a
yeah. It sometimes happens.
We got to get to a test of courage here. But that's also like one of the great things for me is you know that I love about it is that typically you know start Lucasfilm, you know Delray, all these places seek out like it's almost like being a fan is almost a prerequisite. Like it's a, you know what I mean? It's like why? Because you understand that universe better than anybody. So of course, if you're also an author, then that's just a double whammy, right? Like,
yeah.
I can't imagine really them hard, like yeah. I can't imagine them like hiring somebody who is like just sort of like you know so-so on Star Wars. You know what I mean? Like, because why would they want to do it unless they just really needed the money? But anyways,
right? Yeah, I think it would be incredibly difficult to write in. I mean,
any IP,
I
mean, any like, IP, is, any IP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like any, just all right. Like live with something that you're like, meh.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Cause it takes, yeah. You spend so much time writing these books. So I'm going to rename A Test of Courage, the Babysitter's Club. And, and Vern is our Claudia Kishi.
Yeah.
So I've told you before, so when I got all three books at once and I read A Test of Courage first, because this is the one I've been waiting for the most, because the first time I saw Vern, she knocked me on my ass. I just love that look on her face and
yeah,
just her posture and everything about her. Just like right away, I was like, I need to know more about this person, like right away. So I'd like, as soon as I got all three books, I just tore into Test of Courage, read it in one sitting. Great, 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 great. So great. You know, you've talked about Vern and these characters so much in all these other interviews you folks have done. But this book has, you know, and Vern is great. Just let's not spend any time talking about how great Vern is. She's great. Everyone just get over it. she's an incredible character. She's a fantastic Jedi Knight, you know, the youngest Jedi Knight ever to pass the trials, all these great things about her. But, you know, as a 16-year-old, I know the one interview you compared to Doogie Howser, which was perfect. You know, but as a 16-year-old, she's the oldest person in this story, right? For most of it, anyways.
Yeah.
So she's leading this band of misfits. It's, you know, it's sort of like, you know, Lord of the Flies, less violent. But you fill it with so many great characters. The character work in this book from top to bottom is fantastic. So I think I'm less, you know, you've talked so much about Vern in all the other marketing things you guys have done. Let's talk a little bit about the other characters a little bit. So the one that most people are going to love, and Avon Staros, obviously, there's lineage there for sure. Talk about, you know, where Avon came from, you know, sort of deciding, because she seems like somebody the Jedi would want to keep an eye on. You know, right? Like between her desire to create force blocking devices and I'm sorry, but her obvious desire to create a Death Star. so, you know, what's, you know, what was your inspiration with Avon? And is it Avon or Avon?
Avon. Okay. Either one. I will never harsh anyone's pronunciation of Star Wars names, because I feel like however you internalize that name, that's how it's pronounced.
And also she's got a great droid J6, who she's, you know, I won't say, I guess she's reprogrammed a little bit, but she's sort of customized a little bit. And it, you know, I don't know if I'm misinterpreting it, but it seems like, you know, the effect, you know, went so far as that J6 modifications has made her more understanding of the human condition than Avon does. Like, she's progressed past Avon in a way as far as empathy and understanding human emotion is concerned. And Avon struggles with that a little bit because she's so sciencey, right?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. Like, I love Star Wars, and everyone's always like, Star Wars is science fiction. And there are very few fights I will participate in, but the Star Wars is science fiction fight is one I will always participate in, because more of the rules of Star Wars follow will be considered fantasy as a genre than science fiction. So one of the things I want to do is, like, if we want Star Wars to be science fiction, let's look at some science.
Right, but it's probably more soft sci-fi. It's not hard sci-fi. It's probably more soft sci-fi,
exactly.
Right?
But we always have, like I love Rogue One, and one reason I love Rogue One is because all of a sudden it's like there's a scientist who's working on the Death Star, and it's actually like that's when we get to see like the science of the Death Star, right? And that's where we get to see
it,
like,
in action.
They
all get killed.
They literally kill science. They kill science. They die for science.
Rogue One's.
I wanted to have a character who was kind of epitomized like the scientific rational thought. Mm-hmm. Because like so much of the Jedi like mythos is kind of woo-woo, right? It's like you gotta feel the Force, you gotta connect with the Force, and we're gonna meditate. And that's a little woo-woo. And I think like we like that, but it's also really funny to see a character who is not about that mm-hmm. come up against it. And so I really wanted to have a character who was like, look, I'm here for the science. The rational explanation and research and those sorts of things, who maybe, you know, isn't a bad person, but also has that potential. Like, I think the most exciting thing about like Episode 1 and even Episode 2 is we know Anakin's going to go dark, right? And trying to figure out what provokes him to go that way. I mean, cause like you said, I'm old. I watched Episode 1 in the theater. So like, when we saw that, right, and Anakin is a small child, it's like, how the hell is this fool going to become Darth Vader, right?
Right.
And so I always look at that with, like, child characters. I'm like, who they are in this book is not who they will be at the end. And it's what provokes them to be a different person, what provokes them to be this way or that way.
Right.
And so I wanted to have a character who's like, has that potential maybe from the outset to go bad. And it's like, now it's like, okay, are they going to go bad, or are they going to stay on the course? Like, are they going to actually be beneficial? Because I think science is always like that, right? Science can either be used for good or evil. And so, like, to see a character who's like, science, that's my thing. And then like, okay, so, but is she going to use it for good or for evil?
Right,
and then,
right.
Of course, there's like a couple of Easter eggs in there from other books and stuff. So,
you data mined your own books.
I always data mine my own books.
But it dawns on me though that you know Avon's relationship with science is very similar to the Jedi's relationship with the Force, and you're right in both. And the Jedi have the potential to go bad too, like you just said, and so does she, right? And but the way she views science is the way. There's a line, I wrote it down. Avon burned to understand the why of things. That to me seems like a very Jedi way of looking at the Force, the way she perceives science. Like, that's her Force in a way. And there's a really great line later on too, where she says, I wanted to give you and Imri a chance to use the Force before I fixed our problems with science. Now, like, she says it in a deadpan way, right? Because she's sort of, you know, unemotional about so many things. Is your intention, you know, the fact that she is Asteros, does that play at all into any of the decisions she makes that will affect things down the road? Is that maybe too spoilery, or is that, you know, is her concept and her design and the fact that she's Asteros just a fun sort of Star Wars connectivity thing?
I don't think Star Wars is allowed to have fun. Okay. I'm joking so much.
There's an answer in that non-answer.
There's an answer to that non-answer. No, it's definitely a spoiler. I'm not going to tell you because I think it's more exciting when you put it together.
Understood. But
yeah, I definitely think you're going to find out. You know, I think a lot of things. One of the things I always love about writing the kids' books is people are always, there's always a common refrain of like, should I read this? Do I have to read this? Or is this going to be a waste of my time? And in this case, if people don't read the middle grade books, they're going to miss things.
Right.
Because I think that's one of the reasons, one of the nice things about, you know, being able to write in the entire initiative is you can set up your storytelling anywhere you want to. And that's all I will say about that.
Thank you for your, I actually get mad. I saw, and it was a compliment, but somebody posted on Twitter who had early access as well and be like, this is the best middle grade Star Wars book I've ever read. I'm just like, no, it's just a good Star Wars book. Like, I don't, it's, you know, yes, it's middle grade. I don't know. That's just me.
I think a lot of people skip the middle grades. I think a lot of people skip the YAs as well. People are always like, what's a Star Wars book I should read? And I'm like, Elizabeth Wine's Cobalt Squadron.
Yeah.
And people are like, I've never even heard of the book. I'm like, it's Rose and Paige Tico. It's an amazing, it's a excellent book. If you like Star Wars, you're going to like this book. But it's just a lot of times the stuff that's aimed at either juvenile readers tends to get kind of skipped over. So like, I mean, there's a lot of excellent storytelling. And I mean, obviously, like maybe not like the early reader, like, you know, Journey 2, because those are for like little kids. But definitely the middle grade books. I think middle grade books are such a slept on piece of storytelling, not just in Star Wars, but in general.
Right. And well, like I posted on Twitter, you know, on the embargo lift day there that, you know, this is kind of a backdoor story to grief and loss. There's a, like, you tackle some weighty issues in this book as far as, you know, for certain, you know, something that kids, preteens shouldn't have to go through. You know, they are, because that's just the story. But you know, Avon had suffered some pretty deep, you know, she went through some shit when she was younger, you know, I won't say what, you know, that affects, that affects the way she is now. And I'm wondering, you know, so, and there's other characters in this book, you know, there's Imri Canteros, who's the Padawan in this story, who loses somebody important to him. Honesty Weft is you know, just a civilian, I guess we'll call him. Who also loses somebody. Like, each one of these people on this team has suffered some type of loss, you know, and is experiencing grief and trauma. And is it me, or is the book about how they deal with these things almost even completely separate from, you know, the trials and tribulations of the moon they happen to be on?
Yeah, I think, I mean, like, it's like, this is part of our the storytelling and the arc, right? Is like, these characters are like, I mean, it's a relatively peaceful time, and then things start to go wrong, right? Things go wrong, ..
Yeah.
And, like, I think part of that is the emotional arc. I do think, like, you know, it's like, what happens when a Jedi is just living in, like, the height, you know, of their influence and their abilities, and everything is falling apart around you or around them? I mean, like, we kind of got to experience that in a small bit this year with the pandemic, right? Because even if you weren't directly impacted by the pandemic, you were impacted by the pandemic. It's like a shared event that you could not escape.
Right.
And sometimes even if you forgot, like, things would very quickly remind you. And I think when we're looking at storytelling, a lot of Star Wars takes place around these shared events, which is what makes it so exciting, is because there's these events that are happening. And, you know, it's big enough that everybody in the galaxy is impacted in some way. Unless, you know, until you find, like, the one person who is not. And then, like, that's a story in and of itself. And so, like, I do think it's important to think about the emotional arcs of characters, not just they did this, they did that, they did this. Because, I mean, if you think about, for example, Ahsoka, like, Ahsoka's emotional arc is so compelling. The things that she lives through and she goes through and she sees in a relatively, you know, short period of time, like that's I want to know, like, what's her head at, right? Where's her head at, right? Like, you've lived through all of this stuff, right? And you have hindsight and all this sort of, like, that's compelling. And I think for me, that's always like even our child characters, while we don't want to give our child characters like huge amounts of baggage, right. They also have a story, right? They have a place they're coming from, and that's going to color their perception of what's happening. And I think it's important to see that in the story.
So they're on this moon, Wevo. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Either one's good.
Yep. And you know, that's the parts of the book that I enjoyed the most. So there's, you know, they had to retreat. They sort of had to find a shelter, a cave. They, you know, to escape sort of just the elements of this moon. And it's those moments. So the book is filled with them. These sort of quieter, softer, tender moments between the group is because they don't know each other, right? I mean, there's a couple of relationships there, but nothing too serious. But and mm-hmm. a lot of the book is about them getting to not only learn about each other, but themselves. And, you know, they have, it's your team sort of classic thing here. They have to work together if they want to survive. And that comes with problems, especially for teenagers. And, you know, so much of this book is about them learning so much about themselves and each other. And one of the things that I thought was really great was, again, you break each character down to like their lowest point. And, you know, you don't necessarily build them back up, but you leave it so that you know, we feel like, okay, they're not fully healed yet, whether it's emotionally, physically, whatever, but they're it looks like they're going to be fine at some point.
Yeah, and I think in this case, you know, we get a little bit of closure.
Yeah.
But we always get the sense that there's more storytelling to be had. So of course there is. You know, like if you want to see what else is happening with these characters, you know, you have to go, you know, right. Check out the Marvel or the IDW. Or,
right.
You know.
And also too, this is always,
it's pretty nice. Yeah.
I feel like we're constantly going to be reminding people like this is phase one of many books. This would be like the first book.
Yeah.
This is like 1977, right? Like we're just, you know, we've got a long way to go here. Don't get upset because all your questions aren't being answered just yet. One really cool concept, it's not a concept, but one thing that's in your book, it's in this first phase, and it's explored a lot more though, I've noticed, this idea of Jedi getting tired a lot, draining their energy a lot. We see that in The Mandalorian a bit too, with Grogu, but you know, they don't really talk about that a lot in the movies, do they? About, you know, the Jedi, even in the animated shows, the Jedi draining their energy so much that they have to like, they got to sit down, they got to take a break.
Yeah, and I think that's part of, like, you know, part of that is about wanting to show the Jedi as people and not as these superheroes.
Right.
Because, I mean, that, like, you know, they're a monastic order. They're you know, they're really there about, you know, they're really there for the meditation. And so, like that's one of the, you know, the things is, like, you have to have limits. And so, like, when we went into this, we kept talking about, like, you know, we've never seen a Jedi, like, at their limit. Like, I guess you could argue probably during some of, like, Obi-Wan's lightsaber battles and, like, the prequels, you see him and he's, like, you know, he looks tired. Uh-huh. But he never looks like, damn, I just want a sandwich and a nap.
Right.
And I want my Jedi to feel like real people. And I think sometimes, like, we're just tired. Like, sometimes you're just tired. Sometimes you have given it all you can and there is nothing left. And what do you do now? Right? Like, what do you do now? And I think it also forces us as storytellers to not always just rely on the Force as a plot solver, which is like one of my biggest kind of like disappointments when I read a book and it's like, oh, how are you going to get out of this one? And it's like, it's okay. They're going to use the Force. And I'm like, oh, like Force is cool, but like science is also cool. I guess that's my thing. But yeah, like I just love hanging out with characters that feel like real people.
And I think
that's one of the things that I love about Claudia's book and Charles's book too, is like you feel like you're hanging out with somebody you know.
I totally agree.
Like,
with
I
that.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew a kid who was just like Reese. Like I have met that Reese. And I've met, you know, Comac, and I've met all these characters that show up in the storytelling, and it's cool and it's awesome. And it's really humbling to work with authors who value the same sort of things in storytelling that you do, because it's like, yes, I'm so excited to see what we can create together.
That's just about as good a place as any to end it on. I do want to say one quick thing, and this is spoilery for sure. We talked about sort of you pulling things from your other books, and most people that know me know that Glennick Kip from Spark of the Resistance, your previous book, is really high on my list. I am in love with her as a character. I think she's fantastic. I guess she's just 1,000 years old, or what?
What we she talking? Is very old. A lady never reveals their age.
Yes. I was so not expecting Glenna Kipp to show up, ever again, really. But man, I was floored when her name appeared in this book, and so thank you for that. It really cool, but it's that's a long time ago, and really cool. And I hope maybe we get some more from that character, but I won't cross my fingers. But if that's all we get, I have you to thank. So you let slip the other day. We've got a big sort of another launch event. You guys like your launch events.
Yes.
January 4th.
January 4th, I think. It's
Like
the day before the books come out, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
You let slip on Twitter the other day that we were going to see a cover for your next book, which is a YA novel for High Republic.
Yeah.
So that's super rad. Not going to ask you for anything else, obviously, just, if anyone doesn't know that fact, if you already needed a reason to tune in, there's another one. I wanted to congratulate you on that. That's really cool. I love that you're getting to do a YA one. Now, YA comes after middle grade, and Vernestra could be a YA character by that time.
He could indeed. My goodness. Look how math works.
I'm no scientist, this is not a question. It's just more of a comment. I love A Test of Courage. I love Vernestra Rowe. I love that she is taking on a larger responsibility even by the end of this book. She takes on a whole other thing, a whole new adventure coming her way. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how she handles sort of that, this new responsibility, having just inherited one, a huge one already, and her career is moving so fast. But if anyone can do what she can, she's so steady. That's one of the great things I love about her, and her understanding of the Force already is so great. And she does a really cool thing with her lightsaber, which I won't reveal. But that's one of the things we'll definitely save. I think people are really going to enjoy that. Congrats on you getting permission to do that. or thank you, Michael Ziglane, and the rest for letting you do that. So,
thank you, Story Group.
Yes. So Test of Courage, along with Light of the Jedi, comes out January 5th. Claudia's book comes out a month later for some reason. Justina, I can't thank you enough. I love this book. I love the High Republic, just the idea of the High Republic. I can't wait to see Cav's book. That cover is fantastic too, the one they just revealed. I can't wait to see, phase two. And I think this is such a cool move for Star Wars to do. I'm really excited about it. It seems to me they've picked 5 pretty great people to kick it off for us. So congratulations on that. I can't wait for the YA novel. I can't wait to talk to you in May about Ophi's Ghosts.
Yeah.
We're recording this on the season finale of Mandalorian airs today. Did you see it? Have you watched it yet?
I haven't. I'm behind. So I've been carefully curating my feed and muted the Mandalorian. I never see anything in my feed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and I just signed up on Twitter today to take a bit of a hiatus because I have to wait until my kid finishes her homework, and then we have the last 3 episodes.
Nice.
I always feel like I wanted more when I watched The Mandalorian, so I want to just have a nice chunk to watch. So we have, the Ahsoka episode is the last one we watched. I think we have 2 or 3 to watch.
Okay, perfect.
I know there's some spoilery things and that
reveal. This midnight dump thing is ridiculous. I don't know why they do that. Because then by the time you wake up, everyone's spoiled it. I don't understand
the timing of that stuff. I think it's for the kids. I think it's for the kids because the kids can stay up till midnight and watch a show, and I'm like, it's 9:30. I need to be asleep.
Yeah, right. There's no way. So I don't know.
There should be an old people Disney Plus or nothing.
Disney Plus. Yeah. Well, obviously, I'm not going to spoil it for you. All I'll say is that there is an after credit scene. I'll just say that. So don't turn it off as soon as, don't turn it off as soon as the credits roll. The finale I'm talking about. So there's some pretty neat stuff going on, that's for sure. So Justina, thank you so much. Again, this is being recorded before the holidays. So have a happy holiday and a great new year. Enjoy all the great launch stuff in January and all the, you know, great things that are coming your way. There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to my friend Justina Ireland for stopping by. We'll be talking to her again in May when another one of her releases, Ophi's Ghosts, comes out. But until then, make sure you pick up A Test of Courage and all of the High Republic releases. They're all fantastic. This year in publishing is looking especially great. But I gotta say, let's all make an effort to support BIPOC authors in 2021. Because of systematic racism, the scales are nowhere near balanced, and we've got a long way to go. But if we all do our part, maybe things can slowly get better. And the truth is, if you're not reading books written by marginalized authors, then you're missing out on some incredible stories. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to CineLinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.